Well, hey, everybody. How are you doing today? My name's Chris. I'm one of the pastors here. So glad that y'all are with us. We're in a series called Rise and Shine, and we have an incredible opportunity to shine. In just a few weeks, it's going to be Easter, and it's a special weekend across all churches, certainly here at Crosspoint. It's a weekend where we see our attendance double for that one weekend, so we add a bunch of extra services because we want to make room for everybody, but we also want to make sure that people feel loved and seen and valued. We want to make sure people have a great experience. And so that requires us to really grow our volunteer teams to make sure that as we add all those extra services that we still love people well. And so I'm going to ask for your help across all of our campuses right here at the beginning to say we've got opportunities to volunteer. For some of you, this is part of your tradition. Every Easter, you have a team that you like to serve as a part of. Maybe some of you are new, and this would be a great first step in getting involved at Crosspoint. But you'll see out in all of our lobbies, there's a station there with a bunch of lanyards. And every lanyard you see represents a volunteer opportunity, and so like I said, across all of our campuses afterwards, make sure you stop, grab one of those, or if you prefer to do it digitally, crosspoint.tv/Easter, and you can be a part of us shining at Easter here at Crosspoint. Now, I heard a story recently about an angry dad who went to Target. He came in asking for the manager. He said he had an advertisement in his hand. It was for baby products. And he finds the manager. He comes to him and goes, "This is the third ad for baby products that's been mailed to my teenage daughter. Why does Target want my teenager to have a baby?" Manager didn't really know how to answer that question. And he assumed it was probably just a computer error or something like that. But he goes, "You know, I'll look into it. And so he takes the card. And, you know, we kind of know how this works. Maybe there have been times you've gotten an email, said, "Do you know how to fix this?" And you go, "I know how to fix this. Delete. It's fixed." So he probably just unsubscribed her from the mailing list. But nonetheless, he wanted to call the dad back to apologize just once more. So he calls him and says, "Hey, I'm from Target, and I just wanted to apologize one more time." And the dad said, "Well, actually, I think I owe you an apology. It turns out there's been some things going on that I didn't know about, and my daughter is pregnant." And what the dad didn't know and what the manager didn't know is a conversation that had taken place a few months earlier. Some people from the marketing department at Target came to a data specialist named Andrew Pohl. And they came to him and they asked a question. They said, "Could your computers tell us if someone is pregnant even if they didn't want us to know?" Now, that sounds like a weird question. Some of you love Target so much you're getting defensive right now. That Target would never do that. That is Walmart thinking. That's not what Target would do. But they did. They came to him. And here's why they asked that question. There may not be a more profitable parent or a customer than a new parent. That the average family spends about $7,000 on baby products before that child's first birthday. So the marketing department wanted to figure out, how do we reach all these parents? There's a few parents who say we're pregnant, and they do that through a baby registry. But what about all those other families who aren't registered? How do we sell to them? And so Andrew and this data team dug into the numbers, and they started to see patterns. These patterns playing out, these spending patterns that they would see in the baby registry that would also show up in other customers. And so they started assigning percentages to, based on these purchases, this is the percentage likelihood that they're pregnant. So I'll give you an example of what that might look like. If you buy 5 packs of washcloths, sensitive skin laundry detergent, baggy jeans, vitamins with DHA, and a slew of unscented moisturizers, there is a 96% chance that you are pregnant. Some of you guys are thinking about your wife's shopping list lately and go, "Wait a minute, that is..." Not only is it 96% chance likely that you're pregnant, there's a good chance that you're going to deliver in May. Now, I don't know how they know that based on the information, but the algorithm knows exactly why that is. That they have gone in and they've discovered these shopping patterns that emerge over and over again. And see, what they've learned is the strongest predictor of what you're going to buy in the future is what you bought in the past. And not just what you bought in the past, but what anybody bought in the past. Because what they learned at Target is, when it all comes down to it, most of us don't change all that much. Now, I'd ask a question of you. How many would say, you'd admit across all of our campuses that you're a creature of habit? How many creatures of habit do we have? So there's a lot. How many of you say, "No, that's not me. I'm not a creature of habit. I'm more spontaneous. I'm a free spirit"? Where are all my free spirits in the room? So we've got some free spirits. So, well, I have a message for all you free spirits. I'm going to crush your free spirit just a little bit. The truth of the matter is actually we're all creatures of habit. Duke University did a study in 2006. They found that about 40% of everything we do is not decision-making, it's habits. And it's because the brain would get overwhelmed with all the little decisions that we have to make in a day, hundreds, thousands of decisions every day. It would fatigue you, it would wear you out. So as often as possible, your brain tries to form these habits to streamline the process of your day. So let me give you an example. It'd be like a back in the car out of your garage or out of your parking spot. The first time you did that, it took some decision making. You get in the car, you start the car, you put it in reverse, you check your mirrors, you make sure you have your seatbelt on, you start backing up, you make sure there's no one walking on the sidewalk. You make sure there's not any cars in the driveway or in the cul-de-sac out there. You back all the way out, you put it in drive, and you go. But you do that a couple times, and your brain figures out the pattern. You don't have to make all those decisions. That's why some of you now, to back out of the driveway, you can do that while drinking coffee, texting, applying your makeup, and seeing if there's any cars behind you. At this point, there's a lot of habits in play. You just don't have to think that hard about it. It plays out in real time. Some of you, you don't even look anymore. You just put it in reverse and go. It's gonna work out. That's how habit works, and it works that way over and over again. It's not just that one thing. Think about throughout your day the number of things that you can do without even really thinking about it. Have you ever gotten to your destination and not remembered a part of the drive? Like, that scares me. It happens to me all the time because I always take the same route, and I know some of you are probably passing me on the interstate, and I'm just like a zombie looking out of the front of my car. But we do that throughout our day. All these habits form, and they carry us through our day, and it happens in a lot of ways. The problem is, not all the habits that form are good habits. The problem is not all these habits that form in our lives actually make our lives better. The problem is not all these habits that form out are actually leading us to the type of lives that we desire. And it's easy to spot that. It's why there's been 5 million people to go through Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University trying to change bad financial habits. It's why the self-help industry is a $10 billion business. Because we're all trying to change. It's why every few months I have to go on a crash diet because I cannot resist a donut. And we all have these habits that we want to change. We can all agree that we want to change, and we can all agree that change can be difficult. And that's what I want to talk about today. The good news is the Bible has a lot to say about change and how to change. And over the last few weeks, we've been looking at a verse in Romans chapter 12. We've read this verse already, but today we're going to dive really deeply into this verse. Let me set the scene just a little bit. Romans is written by Paul. He's a follower of Jesus. He wrote a good portion of the New Testament. And if you're someone who's new to the Bible, new to faith, Paul's a great person to read because he is an authority on change. He had experienced incredible change in his life. He had gone from being Christianity's fiercest opponent to its most passionate supporter. So if you're not so sure that you believe the Bible, that you're ready to accept it as true, Paul's a great person to read because he had seen both sides of the coin and he knew how it worked. Like, I'll give you an example of what I love about Paul. He writes earlier in Romans, it's not what we're studying today, but he writes earlier, "For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing." Some of you are like, "That's in the Bible? Like, that's my life verse. Like, that is my story right there. That's it." And that's Paul, and he writes that. But he also writes this in Philippians. He says, "I can do all things through him who gives me strength." It begs the question, well, which one is it? Am I the one who can't do the things I want to do? I can't resist the evil? Or am I the person who can do all things through Christ? The answer is both. They're both true of Paul. He was keenly aware that he was still at some level powerless to his bad decisions and his bad behaviors, and at the same time understanding how dependent he was on the strength of Christ inside of him. It's my story as well. There are plenty of areas of my life where I know the change I need to make and I struggle to make it. And that's true of me. It's not something from my past. It's true today. But what's also true is that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But it'd be helpful to have a roadmap on to know how to get from 1 to 2. And that's what I want to talk about. It's in Romans 12, and it's one verse that we're going to read, verse 2. I think this is a roadmap on how we can actually experience change in our life. And so let's look at the verse. It says, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." Now that's a short verse. It's just 37 words. But actually, in this verse is incredible truth and incredible power. And so we're going to spend the next 25 minutes just on those 37 words because I think you'll see the roadmap that you're looking for inside of it. And so let's just look at one part of it, just the first part of it. We'll start with this. Do not conform to the pattern of this world. So what does that mean? Well, that's Paul understanding the same thing that Target understands about all of us, and that is that there are patterns to this world. That it's as true today as it was 2,000 years ago. There are patterns to this world. Now, the world's not the problem. It's very easy to become where we blame the world, but the world isn't the problem. God loves the world. God loves the world so much that he gave his only son for the world. He loves the world. The problem is the patterns of this world, that there are patterns that aren't moving us forward at all. There are patterns with the way that we're thinking, patterns with the way that we're speaking, patterns in the way that we're chasing after things, and those are what create the problems. God doesn't have a problem with the world. It's the patterns of that world. And we can spot it if we sat down over a cup of coffee. We could make a list pretty easily of some of the patterns that we see in this world. There's a pattern to live our lives at a breakneck pace, at an unsustainable pace. We see it all over the place. You know, there's a pattern of this world to live under the weight of crushing debt. Now, there's a pattern of this world to make unhealthy decisions when it comes to sex. And we could keep going from there and there and there, that we see all these patterns that exist in our culture. And these patterns are not leading us to live the lives that we're looking for. These patterns, when they play out in our own lives, can lead us to experience regret and guilt, can lead us to start to say things like, what was I thinking? I just think about that. No money down, payments for 8 years. That sounded like a really good deal at the time, but now I'm upside down, I feel stuck. What was I thinking? Or how about this? I texted that person from my past, the person who's saved in my phone as do not text. Some of you have that in your phone. I texted that person. Now I've opened a door that should have stayed closed. What was I thinking? You know, I had a pattern in my early 20s of not paying my taxes, and the IRS doesn't really have a sense of humor about that. And I ended up with back taxes and penalties and interest. It was a big mess. It took me a while to dig out of that. I remember just going, what was I thinking? And we have these things in our lives over and over again. What was I thinking? What was I thinking? But the thing is, if we ever actually want to experience change, at some point we owe ourselves an answer to that question. Like, it doesn't make sense just to keep going through your life. What was I thinking? What was I thinking? At some point we owe ourselves an answer to that question. Really, what was I thinking in that? But I want to hit pause for just one second on this, because to talk about the things in our life, the regrets, the things that make us say, what was I thinking, that can bring up guilt in us. And I think there's a good form of guilt and there's a bad form of guilt. And there's a good form of guilt that shows up in the form of conviction. And that kind of guilt is a motivator. It leads us to change. It can push us forward. It can remind us of what is true and help push us forward. But there's another kind of guilt entirely, and it's called shame. And shame's a lie. See, guilt says, you know what, I've done something wrong. But shame says, I am something wrong. And shame is a lie, and it's not moving you forward. There is no redemptive power to shame. Paul says in his letter to Corinthians that a godly sorrow leads to redemption without regret, but worldly sorrow will steal your life from you. And what he's saying there is worldly sorrow, that's shame, and it is stealing your life from you. We had an event last month called One Church, and during that we created time where people could go and experience prayer. I stood back just in this area in the back of the room, and I had four consecutive people come ask for prayer, and every single one of them was asking for shame, prayer about shame in their life. I'm telling you, it is telling you lies. It's lies that someone else has told you. It's lies that you're telling yourself, but it is not doing anything to motivate you to change. There is no freedom to be found in shame. And though I didn't plan to spend this much time talking about it, I think it's something we have to talk about. Last week, Ian Cron in his interview said he thought shame might be the second most powerful force in the universe behind love. And so it's time to be done with shame. And just go ahead, say it back to me. I'm just saying, I'm done with shame. Say again, in our campuses too, I'm done with shame. Done with shame. It is not doing anything for you. It's not moving you forward. It is a lie. That guilt in the form of conviction that leads you to change, that's useful. It can speak to this idea of redemption without regret, this idea that God could redeem that broken and disappointing thing about your life and that you could be set free from it. It could be a part of your story, but not a part of who you are anymore. But that's not shame. The truth of the matter is we all struggle with the gap that exists between what our intentions are and what our actions are. But we're not stuck, because the verse then gives us the roadmap of how we move forward. So let's look at the second part of this verse, which says, be transformed by trying harder. Or how about this? Be transformed by using a little more willpower. Or if that doesn't work, how about this? Be transformed by a 20-minute podcast. Surely that will fix everything. That's not what the verse says. This is what it says. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. What Paul is saying there is that there are patterns to our mind, and that most of us will spend our entire life trying to change our behavior, but the reality is what we really have to change is our mind. What Paul's inviting us here is to trade that old worldly mindset that is consumed with the patterns of this world and trade it for a new godly mindset. Like, for the sake of clarity, we put it in your program this way. We'll fill in these blanks for you. What we know in our minds to be true forms a conviction in our hearts, which translates into action. I'll say that again. What we know in our minds to be true forms a conviction in our hearts. It translates into action. That this is the order of how it works. Now, a lot of us, we try to reverse that formula. We try to change our behavior in the hopes that eventually our heart and our mind are going to come around. It's like a fake it till you make it form of behavior change. Maybe that works for you. If so, fantastic. I'll tell you, for me, it has never led to lasting change. It's always been temporary. That we can't start by changing our behavior. It begins, we first change our mind, which then provides conviction in our hearts. It then translates into action. Science and scripture in this point are aligned. It's not just the Bible that says this is how it works. Science says this is how it works too. There's a book a few years ago called The Power of Habit. And in it, the author, his name's Charles Duhigg, he talks about this idea that change begins in our mind. He says what I said earlier about that study from Duke University, that we have so many decisions to make on a daily basis that our brain could never keep up with all of them. It would wear us out. And so as often as possible, it is paying attention to the patterns that are playing out in your life, and it is forming these habits around that. And there's a science to how it works. This is the anatomy of a habit. There's a cue. This is something that triggers your brain to pay attention, that, okay, it's time to walk out a routine. After that, you have the routine. That can be physical. It can be mental, it can be emotional, it doesn't really matter, but it's something that's happening in response to that cue. The last part of it is a reward. All a reward is something that tells your brain that this is worth remembering. And when this cycle plays out, that's what is a habit. It's a cue, a routine, and a reward. So I'll give you an example of how this works. Let me go ahead and give you a cue. All right, go ahead, do it again. Give us another cue. You kind of want to check your phone, don't you? Kind of do. Some of you already checked your phone because that's a really strong cue in our life. That wasn't your phone. That was my phone. It was my text. I got a text from Drew. He's asking if he can borrow some of my cardigans. If you weren't here last week, Drew, in his message, chose to make fun of me for occasionally wearing cardigans. I wanted to point out that he was supposed to be talking about Jesus. But I'll get back to my story. So, all right, give me that cue one more time. There it is. Yes, absolutely. All right, let me show you what's happening with this particular habit loop. You've got the cue, which is your notification. You've got the routine, which is checking your phone for it. You've got a reward, which might be the message, or it might be some sort of approval, a like. It's something like that. And that is what tells your brain that it's worth remembering. Now, this is such a strong cue in our life. You know, maybe the first time you heard that notification, you had to be like, well, what was that? Oh, was that my phone? Well, why did it do that? Oh, I think I have a text. Maybe the first time you had to make decisions, but now it's second nature. You hear that, you immediately grab your phone. This habit is so strong that for some of us, if say you're in a meeting or in a really like serious conversation, you get that text notification, you have to tell yourself, don't check your phone, don't check your phone. Because everything inside of you is wired to respond to that notification. That's how habits work. And that's how they continue to work. What the Power of Habit book tells us is that your brain is doing these things automatically. It's responding to those cues automatically because it believes that's what's the best thing for us. And so unless you intentionally start to disrupt that pattern, it's just going to keep happening over and over. But what his book says is that the truth is that habits can be changed, habits can be replaced, habits can even be canceled. but it begins first with changing your mind. And so how do we do that? How do we begin to change our mind? I'm going to give you three practical examples of how we might do that. It's not the only three. I'm sure there's a lot of others that we could think of, but these were three that I thought might be especially helpful to you today. And very intentionally, these first two, they're super practical. The third one, I think, is transformational. So let's look at what these steps are. The first one is to learn your cues. If what I just told you about habits is true, it means that there is a cue, there's a trigger that's sending these habits into motion. That's good news for you, because it means that the reason you have bad habits isn't that you're a bad person. It's not that you're a weak person. It means that there is a cue in your life that is triggering that behavior. And so the first step, if you really want to start to experience change, is start to get real about what are your cues, what are these things that are triggering you. There's a lot of different examples. So maybe there's a specific time of day that you are most likely to buy things you don't need on Amazon. If that's a habit you're trying to change in your life, you don't just have to take the app off of your phone. You can start to pay attention to what are those times, what are those places where you're most likely to do that. Or maybe there's one friend in your life that you're with when you make bad decisions. Maybe you're sitting with them right now. You don't have to be anonymous. You can do that. You can point to them. It's okay. Might be you. Be aware of that. Is there a certain company you keep that is at some level a trigger in your life for some of the habits you want to change? Are you someone that would say most of the bad decisions, most of the regrets you make happen after you drink two glasses of wine? Well, I'm not saying anything bad about wine. I don't have a problem with wine. But if that's a trigger for you, if there's something in that that is permissioning a choice that you would otherwise not make, don't be a victim to that. Be aware. Be realistic that that is a trigger in your life, that it's creating a problem for you. Remember this. This is true. No one has ever regretted the thing they did after they drank a LaCroix. The first step to starting to evaluate some of these bad habits in our life is just to pay attention to the cues. There's a very good chance that there are things in your life that are triggering these. It might be a way that you can experience change. Once you have figured out what some of those cues are, you can then take the next step that we have here, which is to hijack your habits. It's one of the things that it says in the Power of Habit book. You know, our instinct is always, well, we got to get rid of that cue. And in some situations, that works. In some situations, that cue is just going to keep playing out. So what you do is you hijack the routine. You take that middle section of the habit loop and you begin to change it. And so let's say, for example, maybe you want to stop snacking at work. That's one of the habits you want to change. Well, studies have shown that snacking at work oftentimes has nothing to do with hunger. A lot of times it has everything to do with boredom or a desire to break up your day. Well, if that's true, you're going to continue to experience those cues. Just hijack them. Don't go to the break room. Don't go get a snack. Go for a short walk. Go talk to a coworker. Jump online for a few minutes. Go ahead and give yourself that break from the boredom or to change up your day. Just don't do it with snacking. We heard a story during the Awaken series from someone at our Franklin campus that they really wanted to do more to develop their prayer life. And so they hijacked their morning routine. What he did is he dropped his keys into his boots and then slid them under his bed. Because what he knew, at some point every morning, he was going to have to put his boots on, grab the keys, and go to work. But since it was under his bed, it forced him to get down onto his knees by his bed. He was trying to hijack that little cue in the morning so that he would begin to pray more often. I had to do a similar thing over the course of the last year. I've got a really bad habit of jumping on my email first thing in the morning. And it's not unusual for me to be up working fully into my workday before my wife and my kids are even awake. And I don't think that's the best rhythm for me. Not only that, Pastor Kevin's been talking to us about the benefit of spending the first cup of coffee of your day with Jesus. And I do that some, but I wasn't consistent the way I wanted to be consistent. And so decided, you know what, I need to change this habit. And I decided to hijack the routine. I subscribe to a devotional from He Reads Truth. It gets emailed to me every morning super early. So my cue hasn't changed. I still get up. I still check my email. But in my email waiting there is this devotional. It's this reminder of what to do. And more mornings than not, I skip the work emails and I read the devotional, and I take my time, and I have that first cup of coffee with God. What I've learned is when I do that, most of the time, about the time I'm finishing with that, my wife, my kids are awake. And so instead of making that next step into work, I go ahead and spend a little time with them. I'm a little more present now. It's leading me to better habits. And all I did was take that same cue of my morning routine, and I hijacked it. Maybe that's something that helps you. Maybe one of those of learning your cues or hijacking your habits would help you. But there's another crucial step that I want you to consider as we pursue change, and that's to cultivate belief. It may sound cliche, but the people who are most likely to change in this life are the people who believe that change is possible. And it's why if you look at the effectiveness and the legacy of 12-step programs, a big part of what they do is to help people cultivate belief. They want you to cultivate belief in a higher power. And they're going to put you in community with other people who are on the same journey as you. Because it's a big deal if you've been sober for 5 days to sit next to someone who's been sober for 5 years. They can be a good reminder, help you believe that change is possible, that you can get to day 6, day 7, and on from there. That belief is a really powerful motivation when it comes to change. But I'm not just suggesting this neutral kind of version of belief. I'm not talking about self-confidence. What I would tell you is if you want to experience change, to develop a belief in Jesus would give you access to a power that you currently don't have in your life. That it says earlier in Romans, Paul wrote, "The same power that raised Christ from the dead lives inside of me." So if you spent your whole life frustrated that you don't have more strength, that you don't have more willpower, what I would tell you is there is a whole nother source of power available, and it's available inside you if you are someone who is following Jesus and that you've invited his spirit into your life to empower you to change. It is a powerful motivator. It's far more powerful than what you'd be able to do on your own. If you really want to experience change, I would tell you that relationship with Jesus would help you get there. I tell you, if you're someone here at one of our campuses or watching online, I would say that you've tried it your way for a long time. Maybe it's time to try Jesus' way. Maybe it's time to choose to follow him. Maybe it's time to invite him into your bad habits, him into your circumstances, him into your hopelessness, him into your shame, and allow that to set you free. Allow his power to work inside of you, his power to lead you to the change you're looking for. I would tell you there's a power available to you that it's possible you've not used before. But to borrow a phrase from Pastor Kevin, don't hear what I'm not saying with this. I'm not saying that once you become a Christian that change is easy, because that's not true. Those of us who have walked with Jesus for a long time, we know that's not true. I have a friend named Corey who has experienced unbelievable change, and he'd be quick to tell you that nothing about it has been easy. Corey had had struggles with his weight for a long time, but it had gotten to a really unhealthy place where he was having some problems with mobility, where he had really, shame had led him to isolate himself. But it wasn't until he got really sick that, and talking with the doctors about the direction of where his life was going, that he really found that motivation to change. And he began by paying attention to his cues. Said one of the first things he learned in this process is that the reason he turned to food so often was because of emotion. And so the first thing he had to do was to start to retrain his mind to understand that that was a cue in his life. And so instead of responding to this emotion that he was feeling with food, he started learning how to process and to express these emotions. And with an understanding of what that cue was, he started hijacking his habits. And so he stopped drinking Cokes and sweet teas, and he got some results. And he stopped eating fried foods and fast foods, and he got some more results. But where things really changed gears is he joined a gym. He joined a CrossFit gym. And it wasn't just the working out, but it was the community. That after that time of shame and isolation, getting back into community, remembering that we were created for each other, that we often become the best versions of ourselves with each other, it unlocked some powerful things in his life. But even more powerful than that is what happened when he rediscovered his faith. Corey said that he had known God, but at his unhealthiest, that his spiritual life was dead. As we talked, he said, "I've gone through this journey and everything about my faith has changed because as I grew healthier, God put a desire in me to serve, to help myself by helping other people." That was this interesting pattern. He wanted to serve, and so he would go serve, and serving would help him feel alive. It would give him energy, and from that energy, he was getting healthier, and with that place of more health, he would then turn around and serve some more, which gave him more energy and made him healthier, which would make him want to serve some more. It became this positive habit loop that started playing out in his life. Over the last 4 years, Corey has lost 254 pounds. It's incredible. Now, Corey would be the first one to tell you that he has not yet achieved all of his goals. And he'd be the first one to tell you that it's not easy. It's not easy today. You know, I think we all know this. Sometimes those visible changes, I mean, losing that much weight is an incredible thing. Those things are really easy to celebrate. They're visible and we can see that transformation happening. Sometimes the harder thing to change are the unseen things. I think that's actually what motivated me to share Corey's story with you. It wasn't so much about the weight loss. It was the last thing he told me as we were talking. It was the unseen change that happened in his life. Because he said, I've come from a place of no self-confidence and shame to a place where I can say, I love the person that I am. Like, that's the change that we're looking for, right? Friends, I'll tell you, Jesus loves the person that Corey is. And he loves the person that you are. And he's not waiting to love the person that you'll be someday. I mean, maybe that's the thing that some of you most need to hear today. Jesus is not waiting to love the future version of you that gets all of your mess cleaned up and breaks all of your bad habits and believes everything about the Bible and has mastered everything about what it is to have a life of faith. He's not waiting for that person to give his love. He loves you right where you are. He has already accepted you. He's never going to love you more than he does in this moment. He's not waiting to love future you. He loves current you. He loves the person you are right now. And what that means is that this whole thing that we're talking about of being transformed by the renewing of our mind, we're not doing that for God's benefit. Like, that's not something we have to do to measure up, to earn his love. He's not given this as a prescriptive deal to go, if you want to be my kind of person, do this and then I'll receive you. The reason for us to be transformed by the renewing of our mind is for our benefit. It is to help us experience the change that we desire, but it's not what God is waiting for in us. He's doing this for us. Why do we need to be transformed? It says it in the verse. There's one last section of Romans 12 I want to look at. Look at the closing part of this. He said, then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. The reason for us to be transformed by this is because our Creator, who knows us and wants good things for us, he sees the implication of every decision that we're going to make, short term and long term. He knows how all this plays out. And so the goal isn't just to become a random different version of ourselves. The goal isn't to trade this bad habit for maybe this other habit that could be good. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. That's not the goal. We don't want to waste our time. This is not a wild goose chase of behavior change. The reason we do this is because we want to know his good, pleasing, and perfect will. We want the habits to change that need to change, and we want to be made into a new creation, which is what he promises to make us into. It's like living your entire life with the mindset of a rowboat. Your only chance to get anywhere is just to keep rowing. And everything that you do has to be done in your own strength. And you've done this for years and years and years. You're just rowing and rowing and rowing. And then one day you look really closely and you see in the bottom of the boat there's a sail. Well, what would you do? You'd figure out which direction the wind's blowing and you'd raise that sail. Because we all understand that's a lot easier to take a sailboat somewhere than a rowboat. But it's only if we're going in the same direction. If you're going in the same direction of God. It's what happened when we align our will with God's will, when we seek the changes in our life that he's seeking in our lives, that's when we're going the same direction. That's when we start trading our strength for his strength. That's when we start trading our ideas for his ideas. It's when we start trading our patterns for his patterns. God isn't waiting to love the future version of you. He already loves you. He loves you so much, he gave his only son so that you could experience salvation, so that you could be restored to him. It's why he gives you his spirit. That spirit, that's what the strength inside of you that we talk about, that is his spirit at work inside of you. His spirit is the wind that catches the sail and propels you forward, and he gives you the spirit because he already loves you. It's why he gives you his word, why he gives you passages like Romans 12. It's a roadmap to try and in this life figure out a better way to do things so that we can live better lives and have fewer regrets. It's out of his love that he's given you his son, that he's given you his spirit, he's given you his word. Some of you are tired. It's because you've been rowing for a long time. Some of you feel stuck. Some of you feel helpless. Some of you have lost hope. I'm telling you, it doesn't have to be that way anymore. There is a different way to live this life, and change is possible. All of us are in the same boat when it comes to this. All of us have areas of our lives where we want to change. And all of us would confess that at times change is difficult. But all of us are able to receive his power that can transform our lives. Because Jesus wants us to rise, and Jesus wants us to shine. So to close, let me pray. If you will, here and across our campuses, if you guys would stand, we'll close our time together. God, I'm so thankful for the truth of your word, that it's 37 words, but there's power inside of it. But it's another thing to start walking that out in our lives. And so even now, I just pray that you would open our eyes, that we'd be able to see truthfully into our own lives, into our own souls, that you would help us discover what are some of those cues, what are some of those triggers, what are some of the things inside of us that are keeping us from the life that we desire. And then I pray for your transforming grace that would empower us to change. We don't need a self-help book, God. We need your power. We need your power at work in our lives. And so I pray that we would receive that. And through that, we would live better lives. And not just better lives for our benefit, but better lives so that the whole world benefits. That you would do a transforming work in our church, in our city, in our world because of the change that is happening inside of us. It is your power at work that we're looking for. It is your ideas, God. It is your strength. It is your patterns that we're seeking for, God. And I pray that you would give those to us, that you would open our eyes. And that as we begin to walk in freedom, we would tell those stories. That we wouldn't just take freedom to be for ourselves, that we would help others. People find freedom as well. I pray that you will do a transforming work in the people who are sitting in this place. The person who feels the least amount of hope, I pray that they would just have a spark that changes possible today. And that they wouldn't just operate in their strength, but they would find you. Jesus, change us out of your great love so that we can rise and we can shine. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, thanks for being here. Y'all have a great week. We'll see you next Sunday.